Mental illness is epidemic in America, and the problem is spreading worldwide. It's time for decisive action, because the battle for the mind is part of a much larger war being waged between good and evil, with you as the prize. Welcome to Simple Solutions with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings. For the next hour, we'll uncover Bible-based weapons for fighting destructive feelings and resolving inner conflicts. Dr. Jennings wants to arm you with the tools necessary for achieving emotional and mental stability as you strengthen your relationship with God. We'll open the phone lines for your questions in just a moment. I'm your Simple Solutions host, Charles Mills.
And welcome to the program. So glad you have tuned in today. We continue a discussion on this program we started last week with Dr. Jennings on the subject of love. According to the Beatles, all you need is love. And in some cases, that may be true, but usually love is only the beginning. Dr. Jennings warned us that there are some counterfeit loves out there, emotions that are as dangerous as they are deceiving. Love, it seems, has an evil twin, and today we examine the difference between those siblings. Dr. Jennings, you went through a list outlining the attributes of both healthy love and its deceitful counterpart you call dependency. I'd like to go through that list one more time and let you unpack those attributes for us so that we can begin to discern the differences ourselves as we look for love in our own lives. We begin with attribute number one. You said healthy love was healing and that unhealthy love was destructive. How does healthy love and destructive love do that kind of healing and destruction?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I, from a Christian perspective, and my understanding is that God is love and God is the creator of all life. And when he created life to function upon certain principles or methods. And therefore, when we are in harmony with those methods, this is what brings healing. We can look at it on a physical level, or we can look on it on a relational level. But health and healing comes when we're in harmony with the design template that God constructed life to operate upon. Healthy love is the principle of beneficence or giving. It's the principle of altruism. And there are multiple scientific studies that actually show people who engage in genuine altruism and giving of themselves to help others have better health across the board on physical health or heart rate, lower blood pressures. They have less stress hormones. They die from less cancers and so forth and things like that. In other words, they live longer compared to people who don't engage in these giving activities. So love is healing of an individual as it helps calm on a neurobiologic level. The circuits of our brain that correspond to other-centered well-being and love actually calm the fear circuits of our brain. And as the fear circuits of our brain calm, and listening audience, think about this. When you've been in those moments in life where you really were in a moment of other-centered compassion, other-centered regard, really loving and considering the well-being of another more than yourself, what happened to your fear level? Did it not go down? And as fear level drops, that gives you a sense where less adrenaline, less glucocorticoids, less stress hormones, which means it calms the inflammatory cascade. And the inflammatory cascade calms, we have less toll on our physical body and physical tissues. And so all of this is a consequence of healthy love. We actually get better physical health, better mental health. And over the time, because this is happening, when our fear circuits fire, think about examples. Maybe you've ever been in church and somebody went up front to give an announcement and they walked up front and they looked out to the audience and you could see the panic in their eyes.
Oh, yes.
And
oh,
they
yes.
froze. Now, what happened? If you break this down neurologically, what happened is they got up there and their fear circuits of their brain fired. If you were to take their heart rate shot up. They probably had sweaty palms and they probably had some what we call butterflies on the stomach because the stress circuit firing is activating the sympathetic nervous system, which is activating all this stress response into the body, shifting blood out of the guts into the muscles. So there's that fight and flight stress response happening. While all that's happening physiologically, though, what happens to their ability to think? See, they freeze.
It's gone.
Exactly. So have you ever heard of people with test anxiety? They study, they're intelligent, they know the materials, but they go in and they become afraid. And when they become afraid, they freeze in their thinking. They don't think well. Well, what I'm telling you is the way we're wired is such that when the fear circuits fire, it impairs or reduces the efficiency of our reasoning processes. So we don't reason as well. We don't problem solve as well. We don't love as well. We become more self-focused. And the person up front giving the announcement just wants to run off the stage because they feel embarrassed or afraid. The person taking the test begins worrying about how they're going to fail, and they just want to get out of there. So this is what happens when the fear circuits fire. It impairs healthy physical growth. It impairs healthy relational growth. It impairs healthy intellectual growth. And because we worship and reason with God with our prefrontal cortex, it also impairs our spiritual growth. And as you know, as soon as Adam and Eve sinned, they ran and hid because they were afraid. Yes, fear is impairing everything. Perfect love casts out fear. So healthy love relationships will be calming the fear circuits. We won't be afraid in our own homes. We won't be afraid of what, of how we'll be received, how we'll be looked at, how we'll be reacted to. We feel real safety with the person we're with. That frees us to think. It frees us to question. It frees us to explore. It frees us to examine concepts and ideas we've never discovered before. It frees us to try new experiences. So in other words, it frees us to grow. Genuine love is healthy.
What I hear you saying is that love is a law, that it is just as much a law as gravity and the rotation of the earth. Are we talking about a law here?
Yeah, my understanding of love, it's not simply an emotion. My understanding of love is that love is a principle, a design template upon which things are constructed to operate.
Okay. So that could be a good indication of if we are truly in love, whether what we'll be talking about on this list, whether these things are actually in place and functioning, because if they're not, we are breaking the law of love. Am I making it too simplistic here?
Well, I don't think you're making it too simplistic. This is actually part of the process. A lot of people don't realize they're breaking the law of love when they are, and there's always a consequence. But think this through. Let's see if we can break it down where people can really get a feel for it. And we'll maybe take an extreme example, and then we'll take maybe more subtle examples. What about a man who molests his daughter? We would all, this is an extreme example, we all recognize this is not an act of giving. It's not an act of beneficence. It's not an act of other-centered regard. It's not a selfless act. This is a selfish act on the part of the man, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay? So what happens is a consequence inside of him after having such action or conduct. And if you're not sure, just think about how would you feel if you molested a child today and no one ever found out and you were never caught. How well would you sleep at night? Wouldn't it be torment? Wouldn't you wrestle? And if you could sleep well after such behavior, how damaged a person must you already be?
Really, really.
Okay?
Yeah, because sometimes they say, how do you sleep at night? And these bad people say, oh, I sleep fine. So they are really damaged then.
That is correct. And so the point I'm making is you cannot take such an action without damaging yourself. It's a violation of God's law. And God's law, when you violate it, always has consequence. If you jump off a tall building and step outside of the harmony with the law of gravity, there will be a consequence to that. If you decide to tie a plastic bag over your head and break the law of respiration, there will be a consequence to that. If you decide to stop eating food and go on a starvation diet and break the laws of nutrition, there will be a consequence to that. If you decide to harm other people, there will be a consequence. And it's more than just to your physical body. It's to your character, to your soul, to your conscience, to your mind, to your reasoning capacities. And then that does result in consequences to your physical body as well. So the extreme example would be something as overt and abusive as molesting a child. A more subtle example would be when you at church gossip about somebody behind their back in order to undermine their position in the church or to get them fired from their job or something like this.
Yeah. And here you are smiling and cheerful, like, for instance, your illustration there at church. This person can be smiling and cheerful and seem like the most loving person, but there is a destructive tread with this love, this counterfeit love that you're calling, because what happens when they do the kind of love they're doing, things are destroyed. People are destroyed. Lives are destroyed. Dreams are destroyed.
This is exactly right. So the point I'm making is, sin damages the sinner. When we act selfishly, it always fires our fear circuits, which makes us more afraid of, see, when we act selfishly, we become afraid. The man who molests the child becomes afraid. He's afraid he's going to get caught. He's afraid he's going to get found out. He's afraid he's going to get embarrassed. He's afraid he's going to lose respect, lose reputation, go to jail. So what does he do? He threatens the child. He manipulates the child. He hides. He lies. He deceives. He is damaged in this consequence. And that practice results in more activation of his fear circuits. So let's take another example. Let's say you've been stealing money from your employer. You can't do that without activating your fear circuits. So you become more apprehensive. You become more worried. Let's say you've been stealing for months, and now one day your boss needs someone to help him lift a couch out of his office to go down the hall, and he just sticks his head out the hall and calls your name. Hey, Charles! You've been stealing money. What's the first thing you do when he calls your name?
Dive under the file.
Well, I mean, you'd startle. You jump. Oh, no, did he find out? You see, you live under this apprehension and fear. And this is the old guilty conscience, you see? And so we cannot be healthy. In relationships, it's the same way. If we're not treating people in love, if we're instead exploiting people, we're controlling, we're demanding, we're abusive, we're manipulative, then we live in fear about whether we really are being loved. Let's give an example. Let's say, a husband is on his way home. And let's say the wife decides she wants to be loving to her husband, so she spends the day making a homemade lasagna to surprise him. Mm-hmm. On the way home, the husband, who's had a very bad day at the office, he's irritable, he's frustrated, he picks the phone up. The wife's got the lasagna in the oven cooking, but the husband picks up the phone and says, "Hey, I've had a rotten day, I feel like some lasagna, get your backside in the kitchen and get me a lasagna, and it better be ready when I get there." And he hangs up the phone.
Okay.
Now, say he does that. Of course, the wife's initial reaction is to go take the lasagna and throw it in the garbage that she's already had cooking.
Yes.
But if she says, if she's gracious, if she's patient, if she's understanding, if she doesn't throw the, and when he gets home and gets the lasagna served, I want to point out some subtleties here. And we'll pick those subtleties up right after the break, but I want to point out what he loses by doing this, how it damages him.
This is an amazing illustration. Our phone lines are open for your questions and comments, listeners. 800-775-4673. I love your stories. 800-775-4673. Let's find out what happens to the lasagna on our return. Stay tuned.
Here's your daily heartbeat with Dr. James Markham.
Many days I talk to patients in the office and I try to give them a biblical prescription. They might be on all the right medications at the right doses, but I try to give them something new. And the biblical prescription I like to share with you today is, let's get outside and take care of the earth. You know, we were originally designed to take care of the earth, to take care of the plants, to take care of the animals. There's something that special happens to our chemistry when we do what God originally planned us to do. He originally planned us to take care of the earth we live in. We also know when we're outside, we activate a chemical, vitamin D, which helps change our chemistry for the good. So one of your biblical treatments for the day to change your chemistry is get outside, take care of the earth, take care of God's creatures, and you'll change your chemistry.
Thank you, Dr. Markham. If you'd like more information, go to heartwiseministries.org. That's heartwiseministries.org.
Can you put a price tag on confidence? Hello, this is Jeremy Woodruff, and my oldest daughter, Elizabeth, had a little bit of a struggle learning to ride a bicycle. She had a hand-me-down bike with a mismatched set of training wheels that would come loose, making for quite an unsteady ride. I knew she was close to not needing the training wheels at all, but she just couldn't seem to proceed without them until she could ride confidently with them. So I made a $12 investment in some new training wheels, and it wasn't but a matter of days before they weren't even needed anymore. And you know, seeing Ellie take off with a smile on her face was worth far more than $12. I'm reminded of a heavenly father who was willing to make the ultimate investment to see his children thrive. To learn more about this God of love, call this toll-free number, 800-775-4673, and ask for the free Discover Bible Study lessons. Give your spiritual self-confidence a big boost. Call 800-775-HOPE and ask for Discover.
Eight 1-800-775-4673 is our phone number if you want to jump in with a question or comment on our discussion today. We're talking about love, and who doesn't want to have love in their lives? But there are two kinds, according to Dr. Jennings. There's a healthy love, and then there is a counterfeit love he calls dependency. Let's talk more about that. Okay, Dr. Jennings, you left us in a cliffhanger here. A man is coming home from work. The wife wants to treat him to a nice dish of lasagna. She spent all day fixing it up just perfect, but he's all grouchy. He calls her on the phone, says, I've had a bad day. I want lasagna for supper, so get your little body in there and give me lasagna for supper. And he gets home. What happens next, doctor?
And when he gets home, the lasagna is ready. So what does he get with this type of behavior, this type of action? I want to point out, he gets the lasagna if his wife doesn't destroy it. But what he doesn't get, what he cheated himself out of and his wife out of. So you think the experience different. I want you to contrast and compare his experience having demanded it from her. It comes home and it's there versus his experience having never even considered it comes home and she surprised him with a lasagna. Are those two experiences the same?
No.
While he gets lasagna in both, what he doesn't get in the way he handled it is he doesn't get the experience of knowing that his wife loves him enough to spontaneously do things for him. So he gets the lasagna, but here we're talking about fear now and insecurity. But he doesn't have the confidence and security to know she really cares about him. And in fact, the way he handled it, because he, on his, the way he treated her was inappropriate, he doubts whether she would really do that for him if he didn't demand it. So his anxieties and fears go up. And this is the cycle of destruction that happens in dependency relationships, where we make demands of each other and we get some behavioral reward, but we really doubt whether our partner would do it if we didn't tell them, instruct them, demand it, manipulate it, cry about it, temper tantrum for it, or whatever else we have to do to get our partner to do what we want. So we get the behavior, but we don't get security, we don't get peace, we don't get a sense of confidence and trust. Instead, we get increasing fear and doubt. And that's what happens whenever we violate God's law. We get increasing fear, increasing doubt, which leads to more selfish behavior in order to try to protect self, because we're afraid we won't get what we want if we don't protect self.
Right. You know, we've all been there, Dr. Jennings. We've all been that man in that car coming home from work all grouchy and everything. How do you call your wife and leave the door open for her to love you in return when you are in that situation? What would you have done?
Well, I think you call up and you can express, man, I had a rotten day at the office today. I'm just in a foul mood. You don't deserve that from me. I just want you to know I'm kind of grumpy already. It has nothing to do with you, but I'm just feeling really, really distressed and overwhelmed. And I just kind of want to decompress when I get home. You can express the reality of what you're going through without actually putting it on her or making demands of her. And she might say back, hey, I understand. No worries. You take your time. And you might, and by the way, sweetie, I got a surprise for you. It might help you relax when you get home.
There you go. There you go. There you go. Okay, I love that. I love that. So I guess the message, little message here, men, leave the door open for your wife. You know, don't make demands. Just give the feeling of how you're feeling, and then let her be creative and come up with ways of helping you deal with this. Is that a good idea, Dr. Jennings?
Absolutely, absolutely. You want to confide and talk and be open. A lot of times, though, see what happens is we're already in fear. I'm afraid to let my wife realize I'm not perfect. I'm afraid to let her know that I can't handle the stress of work. I'm afraid to let her know that I'm feeling irritable. And so it's like she wouldn't know anyway.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
We, based on our own fears and insecurities, we don't just openly talk about what's on our heart with our spouse. But when we do that, it sends the message, I trust you. I know you can handle it. I have confidence in you. When we withhold, our moods are advertising to anyone with a brain what kind of a situation we're in. But when we deny it, hey, I'm fine. When wife says, what's wrong, sweetheart? Nothing, I'm okay. You know, it's saying, hey, I don't trust you enough to even talk about you, which only causes hurt and more misunderstanding and what drives a wedge in a relationship.
All right. Okay. 800-775-4673 is our phone number. You can call us and talk about anything you want. We're sort of discussing love here, but you can take us off in any direction you feel that you need to be taken off on. So just be happy to call 800-775-4673. You know, Dr. Jennings, there may be people out there who are listening who are saying, you know, I'm hearing what you're saying, but I have a bipolar disease. I have a real problem here. Sometimes I don't feel loving. Sometimes I feel destructive. Sometimes I feel loving. Are we talking about the same thing here? Are the fixes the same for both of these?
If somebody actually has bipolar illness, there can be times in which there's neurobiological reasons in which certain brain circuits are not functioning properly in both the manic phase and the depressed phase. And maybe just briefly to walk through that. When somebody is depressed, for instance, we know by imaging studies and so forth that the part of our brain where we reason and plan and organize and strategize, which is called the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex, it's right there out above our eyebrow, that part of our brain is not functioning well. So people with depression have trouble problem solving. Additionally, the part right above the eye socket, which is called our orbital frontal cortex, is where we have an experience of guilt and conviction of wrongdoing and activates to redirect behaviors that would be inappropriate. So if you were at church and you decided to stand up one day and try and strip your clothes off in front of everyone, the orbital cortex would start firing like mad, trying to redirect you out of this inappropriate behavior, and you become very uncomfortable. People with depression have overactivity of this part of the cortex. So they're not only not problem-solving well, they feel a sense of guilt and inadequacy. No matter what they do, it's not right. It's still wrong. It's not good enough. They get this sense of insufficiency in all their behavior. Additionally, the part of the brain where you experience altruism and love and compassion and other-centeredness called anterior cingulate cortex, when people are depressed, is not functioning well. And so these people don't experience a sense of compassion. They don't feel loving. They don't feel other-centered. They feel isolated, disconnected, and alone. They don't problem-solve, and they're feeling guilty and inadequate in all they do. Additionally, the amygdala, the part of the brain where we experience fear and insecurity and dread, is hyperactive in depression. So they're feeling stressed, worried, anxious, dreadful, and guilty, inadequate. Nothing they do is right. They can't problem solve. They feel disconnected and unloved. And one other circuit where we experience normal reward, the nucleus accumbens. When we do something good and we get an A and we feel that sense of elation or joy in our heart, that's where we experience reward. People with depression, that circuit of the brain is not functioning either. It's hypoactive. And so even when somebody comes and said, hey, you did a really good job yesterday on that project they asked you to do. Hey, you know, I love your dress, or you just sang so beautifully. Well, people with depression, they get no reward out of it. Life is flat. It's bland. It's gray. There's no enjoyment in things anymore. And so when people have depression, there are real neurobiologic circuits that are not functioning in their same way anymore. And that will affect their ability to experience and relate properly with other people. When somebody's in a manic state, there's also dysfunction in circuits. A little bit different, though. The orbital cortex, which makes you feel like nothing you're doing is right and redirects from inappropriate social behavior and is hyperactive in depression, is actually hypo or turned off in mania. So people can be very socially inappropriate. They can take their clothes off and walk around and not think two things about it. They can stand up in church and shout at the pastor and tell him how wrong he is. Or they can be very rude and obnoxious and inappropriate socially, and they don't think there's anything wrong with it at all. And they also can have this sense of grandiosity, where they believe that their capacities and or abilities are more than they really are. And so because of altered circuitry, so they can lose compassion and they can lose empathy. So I would say if somebody has bipolar disorder, if they're in a actual depressed state or a manic state during that particular time, the altered circuits could impair their ability to relate in a healthy way. However, this is a treatable condition, and with proper treatment, the circuits come back to normal functioning, and in between actual episodes, the person's ability to love and can be compassionate and caring are not altered, and they should be able, and as a healthy person, to be able to engage in truly altruistic, loving and people and other people. Now, what's interesting is that when people live in harmony with God's law, even if they have bipolar disease, they love others, they're compassionate, they are in healthy relationships rather than dependency relationships. That living in harmony with God's law results in less activation of the stress circuits. Therefore, it's protective from relapse. They're less likely to have a manic episode. They're less likely to have a depressive episode. But if they're out of harmony with God's law, they're increasing in guilt, they're stressed, they're worried, they're constantly in conflict with their marriage, that ongoing stress increases the likelihood of a either depressive or manic relapse. So hopefully that makes sense.
It does, it does, it does. We have a caller on the line here for you, Dr. Jennings, at 800-775-4673 that I think has a question right along with what we're talking about here. This is Joyce from Tennessee. Joyce, what's on your heart today?
Thank you, Dr. Jennings. What you've just explained has helped me a whole lot, but my question probably may have been answered. I am a parent of a married adult child, male, who has recently been diagnosed bipolar. He's been in both manic and depressive state, but he's been more persistent in depressive. He is under medical treatment. I guess I want to know, as a parent, parent of an adult child, how to relate to him, because he is a Christian, we are Christians, and of course he's wanting to isolate himself, and we have felt that it's really necessary that we see him at least once a week, and we've prayed with him when we're there and just try to have general conversation and not make it too lengthy. But just how can we, as his parents, relate to him during this phase, and his family, they're hurting. My second part of the question is, at some point, would it be advisable to have Christian counseling for the whole family? I mean, meaning him and his immediate family, just to help with any.
Well, let's take the first
occurring.
The first question, and we're going to make the assumption that this actually is bipolar disorder and not something else that's been misdiagnosed as bipolar disorder, and that is a common thing. Bipolar disorder is misdiagnosed both with people who have it, and nobody diagnoses them with it, so they miss the diagnosis. And then people with diagnosis of bipolar disorder sometimes actually don't have bipolar. They have something else that has been misdiagnosed as bipolar disorder. But we'll make the assumption that your son has bipolar. And when within the framework of bipolar, there's different types of bipolar. There's bipolar 1, there's bipolar 2. And the reality is that patients with bipolar disease spend the majority of their illness in the depressive phase, not in the manic phase. So it's not uncommon he's more depressed than he is manic. That's that's typical of patients. One of the things, one of the things that happens in Christian families is that oftentimes there can be a failure to understand that this is a physical illness, and there, in fact, can be this layer of guilt that is inappropriate, because a person can feel like, if I had more faith, I wouldn't have this sometimes. I guess we're going to break, and I'd like to finish this up after our break.
Yeah, right. Joyce, stay right where you are. Stay on the line here. We're going to finish talking with you after the break. This is very important stuff that you have brought up here. Our phone lines are open, listener, for your questions and comments. 800-775-4673. 800-775-4673. When we come back, more with Dr. Jennings and our caller, Joyce. So stay right where you are.
I'm Lucy Swindoll with a pop quiz for anyone who's ever listened to Christian radio. Question number one. Where's the only place you can be a part of a huge praise chorus with orchestra without leaving your living room? Question number two. Where can you enjoy the finest quality of Bible teaching without attending seminary? Question number three. I love this. Why do so many people know my little brother's first name? The answer to all three questions is Christian radio. We are so blessed to have stations like this one who are committed to declaring the truth of Scripture in teaching and song each day. So give the folks here a call and tell them you're thinking about them and praying for their ministry. Tell them Lucy sent you. Support Christian radio, programming that supports you.
This is the Duchess of York. What's really important in your life? Of course, it's your family and your friends. But isn't it also your health? As the saying goes, when you have your health, you have everything. Maintaining a healthy weight is an important part of a happy and healthy life. People who are overweight or obese are at a greater risk for serious health issues and illnesses such as cancer. An easy way to see if you're at risk is to check your BMI number or body mass index. It's a simple calculation, determined by your height and your weight. The lower the number, the lower the risk. It's that simple. So lose weight in a healthy way. You'll lower your BMI number. Now, isn't that important? For more information and to check your BMI number, visit the website of the American Cancer Society at www.cancer.org. You and your family and friends will be glad you did.
Jesus said in John 14:27, "Peace I leave with you. My peace I give you. Do not let your hearts be troubled and do not be afraid." Do you long for that peace in your life? Let's return to Simple Solutions with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings.
Welcome back. We have Joyce on the line with us, Dr. Jennings, and you began telling her before the break how a person should relate to a son who is bipolar. I believe that's the question that Joyce has for us, so we'll bring Joyce back on the line right now. And Joyce, here's Dr. Jennings' continuing answer for you. Go ahead.
Well, Joyce, you asked how to relate to the son, and I would say relate to him as he's a normal human being. One of the things that people have struggles with when they have a mental illness is that they will struggle with who they are for a while until they come to realize that the illness doesn't change their character, doesn't change who they are. It may cause them to go through certain experiences they don't like, but who they are in character has not been altered by this. Many Christians will struggle with a sense of guilt inappropriately, believing sometimes falsely that, well, if I had more faith, I wouldn't have this problem. In reality, we live in a world in which all of our bodies are biologically defective, and we struggle with all types of physical illness. Bipolar disorder is an illness of the brain and body both. The neurobiology of this illness I only went through partially when I talked about the circuit dysfunction. The circuit dysfunction I described earlier leads to a cascade in the body of an inflammatory cascade in which the immune system kicks up and begins releasing inflammatory factors called cytokines. And these inflammatory factors actually cascade across the blood-brain barrier and actually damage the white blood cells. White cells of our brain, not white blood cells, but the white cells of our brain, the glia, and with a consequence of neuronal loss and neuronal damage. So this is a physical illness happening in the brain. The good news is we have medicines that treat it. And when people are on the proper medicines, they not only can have stable mood, they get neuroprotection where we don't get the same brain damage or brain loss when they're on these treatments. And so first thing I would do is encourage him that, hey, this isn't his fault. This is not something he chose any more than he chose his eye color or hair color. And the good news, we live in a time and an era where we can get treatment that can help stabilize our moods and help have better long-term outcomes. With that being said, medicines alone are only one piece of a treatment pie. When I treat my patients, I use medications, but I use that in conjunction with a healthy lifestyle. So I look at diet and exercise. I look at sleep regularity. I take out toxins and substances that can destabilize mood. Look at healthy spirituality. All of these aspects are considered and brought to bear upon the person with the illness so we can have a long-term stable mood.
Well, thank you very much. That was helpful, and especially learning, how to treat him as he is.
Right. Accept him as, and
the
let
same
him,
person.
Right. And recognize his character is not determined by the illness. And that's the real thing. When God looks at us as Christians, he's looking at character. And you can have a person with bipolar disorder who's an honest person, who's a loyal person, who's a faithful person, who's a person who loves others, but who's struggling with depression. Look at King David in the Bible, man after God's own heart, who struggled with depressive episodes quite severe, that he was suicidal at times. And so just because we have these very, very despondent moments because of brain circuitry issues doesn't mean that our characters are out of line with God's plan for us.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Joyce. 800-775-4673 is our phone number, 800-775-4673. You know, Dr. Jennings, after spending a year and a half here hosting your program and listening to you and talking with you, when I have a feeling of despondency or depression, when I have a feeling of anger, I'm beginning to recognize that this is not necessarily brought about by events in my life. It may be just simply a chemical reaction going on. There may be something physically wrong with me. I may not be eating right. It really broadens my look at myself when I have problems that we all have and we all face from time to time. In other words, I'm not as hard on myself as I used to be. Is this a good thing?
Yeah, I think that is a good thing because you're right. Our moods, we can be irritable because of sleep deprivation. We can be irritable because of some foods. We can be irritable because of lack of physical exercise. Our moods are very, very volatile and can be affected by many, many things. To have the wisdom and insight to allow for a mood variation without jumping all over yourself and all and becoming increasingly more guilty about it, but at the same time to allow a mood variation and have enough insight to say to your spouse or family or friends, you know what, I'm not really feeling very good right now. I'm a little irritable, and I think I'd like to just, you know, maybe go meditate or be by myself a little while is quite wise, too.
Because when we're feeling that way, we love to attach it to something in our lives. We love to attach it to our wife, to our job, to our neighbor, to God. We like to attach these feelings to something in our lives and blame it, but it may not be the case at all.
Exactly right. I think that's exactly what we do, and the reality is it's we all have, I mean, there's not a person listening to this program today that hasn't had an irritable mood, hasn't had a dysphoric mood, hasn't had some a moment in which they weren't really feeling their normal self. We've all had those variations.
Oh, that is good news, good news. 800-775-4673 is our phone number. We're talking about healthy love versus dependency today. Dr. Jennings began this conversation last week. We're continuing it here. And we've talked about the healing versus destructive. Now let's talk about freeing and controlling. You know, Dr. Jennings, I got to say, I've known people in my life that I've known wives who don't want to leave their husband, even though that husband is the worst guy on earth and is beating this person. And is this a dependency going on here?
It absolutely is a dependency. And the danger of dependency relationships, one of the dangers is that the longer one stays in one, the more individuality is slowly eroded and destroyed, and we become less capable of thinking and reasoning for ourselves and more dependent and needy on being attached to the one that we have emotionally depended upon. And you can pick this up sometimes when you ask a person, you say that you've known people have been in relationships and when they've been abused for years. And if you were to talk to them, let's see if you remember how often they will answer questions like this. If you were to say to them, well, what kind of things do you like to do in your spare time? Do you know how they often answer? Well, my husband likes. Well, my husband enjoys doing this. Well, what restaurants do you enjoy? My husband loves when we go to so-and-so and so-and-so. In other words, people in these relationships, if they stay long enough, they actually lose individual dreams, aspirations, likes, and dislikes. Everything that makes them uniquely an individual is slowly chipped away until their identity is only that of their connection to their husband or spouse or significant other. And so when you ask
them, they're being controlled. They're actually being controlled.
Well, and it can be overt or it can be covert. They can be very complicit in this. Many people have such fear and insecurity. They doubt they can ever be loved. They doubt anyone would ever like them. They feel so inadequate with themselves that they voluntarily surrender their individuality to this person who takes enough time to beat them regularly when they need it.
It's
quite dysfunctional, and it's destructive to both parties. The person that abuses and dominates and controls is being damaged, and the person who's surrendering to that is being damaged. Both parties are being damaged in such a relationship.
Well, let's look at the flip side of this, a freeing love. Healthy love is freeing. How do you describe that?
Well, this is exactly, what did Jesus say? I will set you free, and you will be free indeed.
Indeed,
You see, in God's kingdom, the way he designed it, we will have absolute 100% unrestrained in any way freedom of individuality. What is the last fruit of the Spirit? Self-control. When the Holy Spirit comes and heals and restores us, he restores to us our ability to be in complete governance and control of self. We are never, in God's kingdom, puppets. He never coerces. He never controls, because to do so destroys individuality and destroys love. God is working to restore within us his methods of altruistic love for others, which can only exist in an atmosphere of genuine freedom. So you will know the truth, and the truth will set you
free.
And so genuine love is always about restoring a person to their self, where they have governance over themselves. They have freedom over themselves. Well, let's see if we can't bring it on to a level that we may all be familiar with. Let's say we talk about a loved one who may have a psychiatric illness that causes them to lose touch with reality and become what we call psychotic. And they are hallucinating, and they are hearing voices, and they are disorganized, and they can't make sense of things, and they're not even bathing or dressing anymore. And we realize that there is something seriously wrong with that person. If we love them, what do?
We bathe them. We take care of them.
Is that all we do?
We do what they can't do.
Is that all we do? Or do we take their freedoms away and put them in a psychiatric institution where they don't want to be, to give them treatment for what purpose?
If it's bad enough, yes, absolutely.
And for what purpose are we putting them there against their will? For
the purpose of protection.
For the purpose of controlling and destroying their individuality and making them puppets? Or is it for the purpose of intervening in such a way that restores them to themselves, where they can be set free again?
Yes.
So even in our own world, we understand this principle. When you really love someone, you're always intervening to maximize that person's individuality, growth, health, and so forth.
But that kind of control has a very different purpose than the control of someone who beats his wife.
Exactly right. See, there is this dependency, selfish control in which we control someone for our own evil ends or our own self-gratification. Yeah. And then there's this loving type of control where we come in emergency measures to provide structure and intervention and salvation even to someone who is destroying themselves. This is what a parent does to a child who's out of control with fever and delirious. This is what we do as a society to people with psychotic illnesses. This is what God is doing to the whole world stuck in sin, in the darkness. The whole world is darkness covers the earth and gross darkness the people. And God is working to bring us the light to heal, in order to restore and set us free. And this is what love always does. Love is always freeing. Any relationship in which you experience freedoms being eroded, undermined, is not a love relationship. And when it comes to spiritual things and God constructs, you can put this to a test. And listening audience, please think about your own relationship with your spouse. If you were to go home and tell your spouse and start dictating and taking freedoms away, telling them what clothes they can wear, what foods they have to eat, when they can use the phone, when they're allowed to drive the car, who they're allowed to talk to, if you start doing this to your spouse, what will happen to love? This is testable. You don't have to believe me on this. Love only grows when there's real freedom. Understanding this reality, you can go into church with discernment, and you can listen to sermons. And when the sermons come along in such eloquent ways and start talking about God is not only loving, he's holy, or God is not only loving, he's just, and his holiness and justice requires that he must punish sin and sinners. And if you don't accept his payment in your behalf, he will lash out against you and bring fire down and torture you and kill you. Well, what is the ultimate message? Think it through. Try that on your spouse. I'm a loving spouse. I just love my wife so very much. I only want her to be a healthy and loving wife in return. And so I go to her and tell her, if you don't love me, I will give you time. I'm patient. But if the day comes where I'm convinced you really never will love me, well, I will tie you down. I will pour gasoline on you, and I will burn you on fire because I am not only loving, I am holy and just, you see. Yeah. This is twisted.
I laugh, but it's breaking my heart because so many people are hearing this from pulpits week after week.
It's twisted. It's distorted. This is what Jesus came to break. He said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. The Father and I are one. Jesus, you know, God is love. And Jesus says the fullness of God dwelt in Christ bodily. He is the embodiment of love. And when did he ever use such coercive tactics? Never.
Never.
Yeah. Never. And so we have this very twisted idea because Satan knows that if he can get us to believe lies about God, if we really believe God is coercing and threatening, then love cannot genuinely grow in our hearts. We cannot be set free. Fear is retained, and fear is the infection. As soon as Adam and Eve sinned, they ran and hid because they were afraid. Perfect love casts out all fear. God is wanting us to actually be fearless. Fearless. But that can only happen when we are filled with love, when we are loveful.
You know, what you're telling us here, Dr. Jennings, is what we all need so desperately in our own lives, what we want in our marriages, what we want in our churches, what we want in our homes. But that's hard. I mean, we are sinful people. How is it possible for us as sinful people to follow this guidelines, these guidelines that you're laying down for us?
You know, is it hard to follow a guideline that says, hey, I want to actually understand truth as soon as I'm able to understand truth? Is that a hard guideline? Do people really have to
it
say, no, I would really prefer to lie to myself, and I'd really prefer to value falsehood and distortions?
But we do. It must be difficult because so few people do what you're saying.
No, if so few people realize they're doing what I... So few people realize. No, it's not hard once they understand it. The problem is they think they're being virtuous when they're actually believing lies. And so the first principle is, as Jesus said, you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free, is to develop a hard attitude that says, I'm fine. I know there's so much I don't know, but I want a heart that loves what's true and wants to understand what's true as soon as I'm able. And as I understand it, I'm willing to apply it to my life. Now, that's where the rubber hits the road for a lot of people. They might understand, yeah, I understand smoking's bad. I recognize that. I'm convicted on it. But you know what? Boy, that would sure be uncomfortable to apply that truth and quit. Now, I'm not willing to apply it. Oh, I understand my husband beats me, and I understand that that's destroying me, but I'd be so lonely without him, and I'm not willing to apply it. And so what happens is people go down this pathway of lying to themselves and holding to distortions because they don't want to go through the emotional discomfort of applying the truth to their life. They don't want to crucify self, so to speak.
Yeah, here's the Apostle Paul saying that he dies daily. He was willing, apparently, to crucify himself every day for that truth.
And that's the key. If we're willing to do that, to accept truth, apply truth to our lives through God's grace, not in any way that we are somehow remedying our own situation. I'm not suggesting that in any form or fashion. But as we understand the truth that God has revealed and open our hearts and trust, then we actually get new hearts and right spirits. The fear really goes away.
800-775-4673 is our phone number. If you have a question or comment today, we'd love to hear from you. 800-775-4673. We're going down through a list of the differences between healthy, true love and what Dr. Jennings calls dependency, a counterfeit love. The next one here
Well, before
is,
we do that, I want to make an announcement, too, if I could.
Sure.
For those in our listening audience, my book, Could It Be This Simple, has just been released in electronic format on Amazon.com's Kindle.
Excellent.
So
excellent.
For those who have had it in paperback, now there's an electronic version that can be obtained very easily through Amazon.com for the Kindle.
All right. Well, fantastic. I want to say that book is just a life-changing book, and I recommend that you get a copy of it either in print or on electronic copy on Amazon.com. You can also go to Dr. Jennings' website, commonreason.com, for more information on this. Also on that website are a blog and program archives and other resources. And if you are a Facebooker, hey, come on, join us, like it, become a fan. All these Facebook words I'm throwing out at you, you can get information there as well on Facebook. That's commonreason.com or on Facebook, Come and Reason. Check it out. Dr. Jennings, This seems to be one that you're going to have to help me with. You say that healthy love is stable and dependency is wavering. Don't we all waver as we go through our lives? Don't we feel that our love is kind of wavery at any time?
I'm not sure I understand that question.
When our love wavers, when I don't. Some days you don't feel as loving to your wife or your child or those as you would be. Some days you feel like, get away from me. Some days you feel like, oh, I just love this person so much. Is that the kind of wavering you're talking about here?
I don't think that's wavering at all. That's not wavering. Think about this. Have you had wavering of your emotions with your children so that maybe your children find you frustrated? At times, or you find them frustrating. But even when you're frustrated with your children, have you changed your love towards them? Do you love them less?
Okay.
So love doesn't waver. Genuine love doesn't waver. Emotions may waver, but love doesn't. But see, dependency is not a love-based relationship. Dependency is an emotion-based relationship. And thus, when it's a dependency-based relationship, when the emotions waver, then the experience or relationship wavers. Because the relationship is based on emotion rather than genuine love.
Okay, I have put new headers above these lists here. The healthy love is love-based. The dependency is emotion-based. And you have talked many times on this program, Dr. Jennings, about emotions and how they're really a loose cannon in our lives. Am I right?
Emotions are a vital part of our experience. God designed us to have emotions. But the way he designed it is that emotions are supposed to follow like a caboose on a train through the leading of a reason-based, healthy decision-based life. And so, and then it gives a vibrance and a zest and an energy and a color to life. So we shouldn't be bland and flat without emotions. However, what happens is oftentimes people have emotions become the most supreme power in their life, and all life is filtered through the emotion, and they draw conclusions based on the way they feel. They believe life is as they feel. They make decisions based on as they feel, and thus emotion-based living becomes very volatile and unpredictable, very much like the waves on the ocean. You're just tossed back and forth by the latest wave of emotion that comes through.
Okay, all right. So the caboose would be before the train, and that's not a bad, that's where it does not belong. It needs to be at the end of the train, led by evidence, led by love. Emotions is part of it, but it should not be the engine that drives your life, right?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Very good. Honest and deceitful. Now, you've touched on this a little bit here. True love, healthy love is honest. How are, give me some examples of how dependency can be deceitful. We all know of spouses that lie. Is that what we're talking about?
Well, certainly it can include that. There's no question that dependency can include the outright deceitfulness, but the greater deceitfulness is the self-deception. My husband, for instance, the husband just beat a wife and she says, oh, he didn't really mean it. He just had a bad day. He really loves me. He really cares for me. He really thinks I'm special. Or a wife whose husband cheats on her. Oh, he just had a weak moment. He didn't really want, you know, I can trust him. This self-deception that we go through. That's what dependency does. It's not willing to actually acknowledge the truth as it actually is. What happens is they create fantasies or imaginary worlds in which, you know, he has so much potential or she has so much potential. If only she would get her alcohol under control. If only she would stop doing this. If only he would stop doing this. I mean, she's just so smart, so beautiful. There's so much potential. We could be so happy if only. See, that's a big lie.
Dr. Jennings, I don't know how you keep from yourself from jumping out of your chair and leaping across the room and just shaking some of these people that come and see you, because I mean, you don't talk about them in person, but I'm sure you have seen this. You have seen a person sitting over there saying these very words. How do you control yourself, and what do you say to these people?
Well, this is the point. I point out that they're not dealing with reality. They're dealing with fantasy. The reality is what actually exists today. We are to base decisions on the facts of life as they are, not on the hopes and wishes that they would one day be. And when you've been with somebody for a couple of years, now it's okay to have certain hopes and expectations in the beginning phase when you really don't know somebody and you hope that it'll turn out way, and you keep your mind open to actually accept facts and evidence as they come in. That's fine. I mean, you always go in with a hopeful attitude, but sure. We can't allow the hopeful attitude to become the fantasy that we build a decision tree upon. The hopeful attitude is constantly being compared and modified based on the actual evidences of the experience with the person. And what happens is, though, in dependency relationships, the need is so great that the relationship be something that supplies emotional sustenance that they will deny reality. They will deny the person is anything other than the fantasy as long as they possibly can in order to allow themselves to believe they are really special and really being loved and really being affirmed, because it's all about their need rather than about the truth of who that person is.
Oh, but the fantasy is so comfortable and so colorful and so lacking in hard work. Sometimes people just love to stay in those fantasies, but you know, that is heading down.
And what you just said is very common. They'll say, I've had people say, and that is another lie. It's another way they lie to themselves, because the fantasy actually is not more comfortable. The fantasy is actually not easier. The fantasy actually causes more emotional exhaustion, more pain, more suffering, more damage, wastes more time, it wastes more resources. And so in over the long haul, it's actually a huge lie to think it's easier to stay in the fantasy. It's actually much harder to do that.
Wow. Well, we just have a couple of minutes left in the program. I want to touch on this one. True love, healthy love is forgiving, and emotion-based dependency is keeps score. You said that last week. What do you mean by keep score?
A healthy love is forgiving, you said, and what was the other thing?
And dependency keeps score.
Yeah, because you said emotion-based. I want to clarify, no, healthy love is not emotion-based.
No. The emotional-based dependency.
Yeah.
Emotion-based dependency.
Yeah. Okay, so healthy love is forgiving, meaning it doesn't keep score. I have patients in my office in marital therapy and dealing with marital issues, and some of them will bring up seriously issues over 20 years old repeatedly.
Oh, man. Wow.
And they bring them up, and they bring them up, and they bring them up, and there's this clear scorekeeping. And anything good they do, well, you know what? I remember that's 14 years ago when the dog got hit. You remember I came home from work, and I took the dog to the vet because you were so upset. Don't you remember me doing that for you? Okay? And just keeping score of everything that they do and everything that was done wrong to them. This is not love. Love doesn't do that. That's dependency.
But they're just trying to protect themselves. They don't want to be taken, but they're just trying to protect themselves by remembering this stuff.
Yeah, what they're trying to do is justify self. I'm trying to prove that I am worth something. I'm trying to prove that I deserve your affection. I deserve you to stand up for me. I deserve your attention. I deserve your affirmation. I deserve you to admire me. I deserve. It's all about self. It's self-centered, and that's what dependency is. Love is selfless. It's other-centered. It's not about whether I get what I need. It's about whether I'm in harmony with God's law of love, and I'm giving what I can to help others.
My. Well, Dr. Jennings, you have spent an hour here with us and told us some very important things that we need to apply to our lives. What's a good place to start? Give us just one little kickstart, one step we can take today to start us on this journey toward, or returning to, in some cases, healthy love.
Start with your own self first. Most of the time, people start by, and this is where dependency relationships constantly break down. The persons in dependency relationships spend all their energy trying to change the other person. So we start with our own self first.
Okay, all right. Well, this has been a wonderful show today. And listener, I hope that you have gained some real insights here into what you have heard. We will continue talking about these subjects and others each week on Simple Solutions, and I invite you to join us. I also invite you to Dr. Jennings' website, www.comeandreason.com. Check it out. His blog, program archives, resources like his book, Could It Be This Simple? Also, if you are a Facebooker, join us as a fan of Come and Reason. My goodness. And I just want to remind you, listener, that we also will take your questions on the website, comeandreason.com. You can leave them there for future shows, and we will address them as they come in. So feel free to just share with us what's on your heart and listen to the program for the answers that Dr. Jennings has for you directly from, I'm saying, on high and from the Bible. These answers come to us via Dr. Jennings from, I think, a God of love. Until next week, this is Charles Mills, along with Dr. Timothy Jennings, inviting you to apply the simple solutions God placed in your heart today. Goodbye, everyone.
Simple Solutions is a production of Life Talk Radio and Dr. Timothy Jennings, and is made possible by your generous support. For more information, visit www.comeandreason.com.